top Seattle's Queen Anne Hill, it's Shamefaced, plugging the holes in a spotty education.
I'm Vince Keenan.
And I'm Rosemary Keenan, and welcome to Shamefaced, the podcast that's a companion to our blog, Shamefaced. This week we'll be providing an introduction to what Shamefaced is all about. But first, that sound you heard at the beginning of the broadcast, that was the Shamefaced Cocktail Shaker. And this week, Vince is fixing Negronis. So Vince, what's in a Negroni?
Well, Rosemary, I'm glad you asked. The recipe that I use comes from Toby Sacchini's excellent book, Cosmopolitan, which is a memoir about being a bartender. His approach to the drink is 3 parts Campari, 3 parts sweet vermouth, 8 parts gin.
Ooh, 8 parts gin.
Yes, parts gin. As many parts as you can possibly fit in. He also suggests that you garnish it with an orange slice, and this is where I think we went wildly wrong because...
It's beautiful, though. Beautiful drink.
Well, I think when you garnish a cocktail with an orange slice, it just means you're supposed to kind of hang it over the side of the glass.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually cut an entire, like a slice of orange.
It's
like
a cross-section,
really. A cross-section of the orange, and we throw it on top of the cocktail. So
it's so pretty, though.
It is very pretty, but then you have to kind of work around this. It's like a tarp floating over the top of the drink.
Yes.
So yeah. I don't think we're doing that right, but boy, is that orange tasty when you get to the bottom of the glass. That's all I can say.
Oh, yeah. Soaks up that gin.
And so you may be wondering why we are, in fact, talking about cocktails at this part of the show. It's because we decided very early on that alcohol might be very helpful in doing this podcast, because it's all about embarrassment.
Yes.
There is a high embarrassment factor involved with Shamefaced, hence the name. It's all about the books and movies that you feel like you should have experienced at some point in your life. Books and movies you may, in fact, be pretending that you have... go ahead.
Pretending? Who would do such a thing?
Yeah, basically, we've faked our way through books and movies now for many, many years. We pretended that we've read these classic books or that we've seen these movies, when secretly we haven't.
No.
And so what Shamefaced is about is just admitting the lie, saying that we don't know what these things are really about, and experiencing them for ourselves. But in order to admit that we haven't, that we don't know them, and then to talk about it in public, we need to get liquored up.
Right, exactly. I'm all for that, really. Any reason to do that is okay with me. So, on the blog, so far, we've each read 2 books, am I right? Or are you ahead of me by one?
I think I'm ahead of you by one, but two
yes.
of them were by the same author.
That's
there are
right.
2 Hemingway books that I've written about so far.
Yes, and I wrote about reading an Ian Fleming James Bond book, which I had never read, which was so much fun. That was a great book. I don't know why I had deprived myself of that. But now I don't have to be embarrassed.
Exactly.
Exactly.
But the Ian Fleming book, I think, brings us to the next area that we want to get into, which is what exactly is the definition of a classic?
Right.
And so what should we be considering to talk about on the blog and on this podcast?
And so I think very quickly when we started to think about this concept, we thought, well, we're not just talking about,
the great books.
The great
books. Those lists that you see every once in a while.
And yeah, it's not just
the
Plato
canon.
And Hobbes and Marx and Moby Dick and all those guys.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a pantheon of greats, and certainly that's what we started with. But at the same time, That's kind of the high end of what we're talking about. There are a lot of works of popular culture that you would want to have some kind of familiarity with that, again, we have been faking. I mean, you've seen some of the James Bond movies, but you've never
yes.
actually read any of the Ian Fleming books, which are a totally different animal.
We have some movies that we'll be watching as well.
Yes.
Perhaps even a TV show or two.
Those
count as a classic?
Those do count as a classic. It would be very interesting to see how we can figure that out, like if we have to watch an entire season.
Oh, God, no.
Because that would be... We would need to make a pitcher of drinks, I think, if I was going to get through certain seasons of shows. That would be... That's like an entire day, practically.
Yeah, well, I've never seen a whole episode of Fantasy Island. But see, I don't
know if that would
be on the list.
See, I've never seen an episode of The Andy Griffith Show.
Now see,
I think that would count as a classic.
Right.
But again, I know Barney Fife and Aunt Bee and all of the characters. You know, Miss Kitty, Marshall Dillon. Oh, wait, that's Gunsmoke. And I haven't seen Gunsmoke either.
But I bet you've pretended that you've seen Gunsmoke.
Oh, yeah. Moving on. So I guess the next question that we want to talk about is, why did we decide to do this as a joint project? Why is it something that you and I are doing together, as opposed to something that, you know, I would just take the ball and run with it?
Right. Well, you have your great website, vincekeenan.com.
What was that name again?
That would be vincekeenan.com, C-O-M. And you write about all kinds of things, all kinds of popular culture things.
Past and present, high and low, one day at a time. I think that's how it is.
I think that's your tagline, yeah. And so on that blog, you talk about what you've been reading and watching and doing.
Yes. I initially started out talking about some of these classic books that I had read. Because it's one of those things where I'd make the resolution every year that I would read more books like this. And so the first quarter of the year was kind of front-loaded with some of these books because I would go out and say, well, I'm finally going to read Catch-22. And then I would read it and write about it. And I thought, well, if I'm going to be serious about this, I'd like to kind of put it into its own blog.
Right, and just the very idea of it was quite appealing to me, because although I actually had a minor in a humanities program in Queens College, there are plenty of books.
Where Jerry Seinfeld went to school,
yes,
I'll have you know.
And Paul Simon, too.
Wow.
Maybe even Art Garfunkel.
They met in the quad, if I remember correctly.
There's a plaque there now, actually. So I had read a number of the classics while I was taking this minor through my 4 years there.
A number in this case being kind of a lot, at least for me. I mean,
right,
when we would talk about a lot of these books, when we would see these lists, I would shamefacedly, plug, admit that I don't really think I've read like a third of these. And you would go over the same list and say, oh, well, I read this, and tick them all off, because you were actually in a program of study for this kind of material.
Right, but there were plenty that I hadn't read. We never actually, so we kind of tended more towards the philosophy. So I've read a lot of the political and social philosophy, but not a lot of the novels. No George Eliot, no George
Oh, he's great.
Sand. Yeah, I hear he's just wonderful. Yeah, So I thought, well, this would be great if we could do this together. We'd both be learning a lot, and we'd both be admitting our shame publicly.
Yes, although you have much less of it to admit than I do. And I, as for my academic background, if you want to call it that, I went to Boston University, which is where Bill O'Reilly went to college.
Woohoo.
And I studied film. I did not study humanities the way that you did. And so there was very little assigned reading when I was in college, that I had to do at least books of this type. When I was in high school, we would be assigned these books, but we'd always do them in units. Like, so, well, we're going to do a unit on David Copperfield.
Mm-hmm.
And we would get the book, but we wouldn't actually read it all the way through. We would sort of be given chapters to read so that we'd understand what the book was about in case it came up on, the advanced placement English test later in the year. And so I was telling you right before we recorded this that I did a unit on David Copperfield when I was in high school, but at no point did we read any of the chapters that include Miss Havisham, who is, correct me if I'm wrong, she's like the signature character from that book.
So you're assuming that I've read David Copperfield.
I thought you'd read David Copperfield.
So this
Ooh.
Is now... I'm now shamefaced.
Okay, now you're... Well, see?
If this was a video podcast, my face would be red.
I think there's more drinks left in the cocktail shaker if you want to pour that out.
Maybe it's time to do that.
So, wow, I've just embarrassed you publicly on the show. That's not good.
But the thing is, so Miss Havisham, if you were going to read any part of it to pretend you had read David Copperfield,
exactly,
that would be the part you would read.
And yet, if I were to talk to somebody about, my experience of David Copperfield, I would say, well, it's about this orphan, and he goes to the city. And that's the extent of what I know about it. Although if it had come up on the AP English test, I would have just nailed it. I would have written a brilliant essay and gotten, full credit, and I would have been a tribute to my school.
Well, good for you.
But that's basically that's what my background is when it comes to these kind of books.
And one thing about a marriage, what a marriage, is that you're constantly talking to the other person, hopefully, and sharing things with them, and it seemed like this would be a great way for us to maybe point out things to the other one that we had liked very much. It's like, oh, you would really love this. you should read this book or see this movie. And in fact, we kind of do this all the time anyway.
Well, it's like that line that Katharine Hepburn said about Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers. That, I know what it is now, it's just, I'm just collecting it in my head. That she gives him class and he gives her sex appeal.
Vice versa, actually.
Yes.
Oh, I just got that backwards.
I thought he gave... it's backwards.
He gave her class and she
gave him sex appeal.
Yeah.
And the point of this is... Rosemary gives me class and sex appeal, and we are hoping that this will enable us to figure out what I give her.
But so as an example of what we have done in this area before is, pardon me, I introduced Vince to the Palm Beach story.
Yes, there was one night where we were, this is many years ago, when we were talking about how each of us grew up interested in different things, and we decided that we were going to program our own double bill one night, and that we would each show the other one a movie that meant a lot to us, but that, you know, the other person hadn't seen and would maybe be able to take something away from. And so I
introduced Vince to The Palm Beach Story, which is a movie from 1942, written and directed by Preston Sturges.
Ah, the great Preston Sturges.
Hilarious movie.
Oh, it's wonderful.
Just, it's wonderful.
And it was one of those because at that point, I'd already gone through film school. And so Sturges' name, of course, came up, and people talked about how he was perhaps the single greatest American comedy filmmaker. And he had an amazing run in a period of about 5 years. The Palm Beach Story was right in the middle of it, but he was also making Hail the Conquering Hero and Miracle of Morgan's Creek and Sullivan's Travels all during this insane period from, I think it was 1939 to 1945. And so if you were to ask me prior to watching the movie with you what I knew about Preston Sturges, I would have been able to blather on about all that stuff that I just said, but I hadn't seen any of the movie.
But you hadn't seen any of the movies.
Isn't that horribly embarrassing?
What did you say before? Dead inside?
I felt dead inside.
Yes.
That's correct. Thank you for reminding me. And then that night, I was able to show you George Miller's immortal 1981 action movie classic, The Road Warrior.
The Road Warrior, which you had
never seen.
Had never seen, although I was a big Mel Gibson fan. I think it's fair to say when I was, as a young woman, I maybe tended a little bit toward the pretentious side. So, I had seen Gallipoli, I had seen The Year of Living Dangerously, but The Road Warrior, no, not me, I'm not going to go see that. It's too violent or whatever, I don't know, but it was certainly not, I was not seeing action movies at that time in my life.
And that's really, I think, if you were going to hold up an example of just great action filmmaking where everything in the story is advanced through physical movement.
Oh my God, it was so great.
It's tremendous.
Yes.
It's like one of the best movies ever of that type, and just in general. And also to go back to something you said just a second ago about being pretentious, I don't necessarily think seeing Gallipoli or The Year of Living Dangerously is pretentious, because those are both very good movies. He said not having actually seen Gallipoli. But I have seen The Year of Living Dangerously, which is a wonderful love story, and I mean, okay, it's a little pretentious to say, well, I'm not going to see an action movie just because it's an action movie.
Right, but, even though it was a foreign movie, which... Back then, well, if it's a foreign movie, then I can go see it without any shame. You know?
Yes.
But it was foreign and action. I feel like the action probably outweighed the foreign in my mind at that point.
And it's, you know, it's also, I think, it's good to kind of get clear the air about what you have seen and what you haven't seen. Because another thing that prompted me to think about this and to eventually do this project was that back in, I think it was 1990, I dragged you to see Godfather 3 the day that it opened, and it was, there was a terrible ice storm that day, and we were taking our lives in our hands, going down Seattle's Queen Anne Hill to go to the Cinerama and see this movie, and you liked it, you thought it was okay.
Yeah,
and,
that's right.
Garcia. Mm. Yeah, that's true. Mm. It's a little something for the ladies. But, you know, there are scenes in that movie that really spoke to me as somebody who would love the first two movies. And then a couple of years later, they reissued The Godfather. They re-released it to theaters. And I said, well, I've never actually had the chance to see it on the big screen, so we have to go. And when the movie ended, you finally admitted to me that you had never seen either The Godfather or The Godfather 2. So you started with Godfather 3.
Yes, and... I was so embarrassed. I mean,
you should have been embarrassed.
I don't withhold things on a regular basis from my husband, but I was so embarrassed that I hadn't seen either of the Godfather movies. It's like I just couldn't say it. I tried to avoid the topic. Oh, we saw Godfather 3. Okay, sure, right? But after The Godfather was over, how could I not say it? I mean, I was just blown away by the movie. It was so fantastic.
And then we immediately procured a copy of Godfather 2 so that you were able to catch up. Because right. You know, the thing about Godfather 3 is that for all of the movie's problems, there are scenes in there that have real power for people who have experienced the other two movies. And to just walk in cold and see the third movie, which is, you know, kind of a mess in some respects, it's not fair to you, and it's not fair to The Godfather 3 or the movies that have come before it. And so, you know, it was a rough patch in our marriage, and we want to make sure that kind of thing never happens again.
That it never happens again. So we're being totally honest now about what we have read and haven't read.
And have seen and haven't seen.
Exactly.
And we're going to do what we can to kind of bring the high and the low into play here.
Exactly.
Which is still something that we're still trying to hash this out. What actually would, you know, what kind of things we're going to include in this? Because we had one of the commenters, one of our wonderful commenters at the website, who was known to us only as Ms. Smarty Boots. Although, if I'm not mistaken, I christened her with that name. She asked a very good question, if we're going to talk about poetry.
Right. I don't see why not.
I don't see why not. I think it would be very interesting. I'd want to find a resource where I could see a list of books that might be a good place to start, because I am totally in the dark when it comes to poetry.
Okay. So, and I enjoy reading poetry, so I've read a number of things. The first thing...
Well, it's not like I don't enjoy reading poetry. I just don't know
anything
about it.
Well, then why haven't you read it?
Well, most of the poetry I've read are about, you know, the various residents of the Nantucket area. I know a lot of those. That'll be in the explicit, but that's the late show, when we right. work blue.
But Ms. Smarty Pants mentioned about poetry.
Smarty Boots.
Smarty Boots, I'm sorry.
Yes.
And, I asked you, Vince, I said, well, have you ever read Hal, Allen Ginsberg's Hal? That's a great, famous poem.
Yes, it's an excellent one to start with. And the answer to that, of course, is no, I haven't. I know, like, the Lisa Simpson version that she wrote. Basically, everything I know about high-end culture, it comes from The Simpsons.
Right. Or Monty Python.
Or Monty Python.
Reaching back.
Or, you know, going back to, you know, my younger days, Mad Magazine.
Oh, sure.
Sure.
Right.
And occasionally Cracked.
Well... there are any number of movies that I haven't seen, classic movies, that I have read the Mad Magazine parody.
That has actually been your response to things where I will say to you, have you seen this movie? And you will say, no, but I read the Mad Magazine
yes.
parody.
Like Shampoo, I remember, and Love Story, and Joe, that movie with Peter Boyle.
Which was done as Schmo, I remember that.
Right, and so sometimes I don't even recall if I have seen the film or that I just read the parody.
Well, this is the thing that we're talking about. This is what the essence of Shamefaced is that if you get to the point where you have some limited knowledge of a book or a movie, and especially if you try to convince someone else that you've seen it, at some point you forget that you haven't seen it, and you
That's right.
convince yourself, oh yeah, I saw that ages ago. And this is us, you know, finally coming to terms with the fact that we're lying and want to experience a thing firsthand.
Right, and perhaps we'll even, like, pick up a book, because I've been pretending that I've read this book, and start reading it and realize, wait a minute, I did read this book.
And I didn't like it.
Yeah, so maybe.
And that's the other thing, you know, it's our promise to you, the reader and listener, that if we read something or watch a movie and don't like it, we will cop to that.
Even if it's a classic.
Even if it's a classic. Because a lot of them, frankly, they don't hold up.
Well, we'll see.
Yeah.
I guess we'll see about that. So, Vince, do you want to mention what you're reading now? What's going to be your next post on the blog, do you think?
It will probably be about Fyodor Dostoevsky's Notes from Underground.
Ooh, very classic.
Which is, I have read Dostoevsky before. I will be getting into this in the post. But I've been meaning to read Notes from Underground for about 15 years.
All right.
And I finally am digging into it now. And I will say I'm enjoying it immensely. Rosemary, what are you tackling right now?
Right now, I'm about a third of the way through Sigmund Freud's The Interpretation of Dreams.
Wow.
Yeah, it's great. Are you kidding? It's a page turner. There's some
Seriously?
Freaky stuff in there. Oh, yes, definitely.
So it's mostly case studies or, I mean, it's...
Oh, yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. He kind of reviews the literature at the beginning and then goes into, he has some of his own dreams in there, his children and his patients, and they're just fascinating.
I'm sure it's all handled ethically on Sigmund's part, using his children.
I'm sure it is. I was just going to mention, though, the reason you might wonder why I picked up this book. Oh, I've been longing to read Freud. No, basically it's because I was a member of the Quality Paperback Club for quite some time, and I happened to have bought this. I was like, oh, I should read this, and I bought it, I don't know, 10 years ago? More?
Yeah,
15
about.
Years ago? And it's just been kind of hanging around the house, and it seemed like a great one to pick for Shamefaced.
And this always points out the benefits of moving, or every once in a while buying a new bookcase.
Right.
Where you're forced to reorganize the books that you have. And there are plenty of books there that you haven't read that you intend to read. And this was one where you picked it up and said, okay, now is the time.
Now is the time, and this is the place.
Yes.
And I think Freud would understand about shame.
Really? You think so?
I don't know. I didn't get that far, but we'll see.
Yeah.
Perhaps.
And so, unless we were going to take callers, were we going to take callers this week?
Maybe next time.
Oh, okay. This seems as good a place as any to bring the inaugural Shamefaced podcast to a close. We would like to invite you to stop by the Shamefaced blog, which you can find at shamefaced-. We know the word itself is not actually hyphenated, but it was all that we could get. shame-faced.blogspot.com. Or please feel free to email us at shamefacedblog, all one word, no hyphens. What are you going to do? shamefacedblog@gmail.com.
That's shamefacedblog@gmail.com.
Thank you, sweetie. And so?
I'm Rosemary Keenan.
And I'm Vince Keenan, saying, only you know what you don't know.